ropes leading it from the circle of evergreens that surrounded the pit. I could see the tops of the trees against the moon and the clouds.
Dresden, Murphy said again, are you all right?
I'm alive, I said. I blinked at her for a second and said, I thought they killed you. Her blue eyes sparkled briefly. Her hair was a mess, and her jeans and flannel shirt were rumpled and soaked with muddy water. She was shivering from the cold.
I thought they had too, but they stopped as soon as Denton took you out and tossed me down here. I can't figure why they didn't do the deed themselves instead of leaving it to MacFin.
I grimaced. Trying to cover their tracks from the White Council, I said. Denton wants MacFin to take the fall for all the deaths. I think he's lost it. I always wind up in the nicest places when I hang out with you, Dresden.
You were tied up, I said. How'd you get loose?
She had help, someone said in a slurred, heavy voice. For all the good it will do her. I turned my head to see a naked and dirty Tara West sitting with her back against the wall of the mud. There were five soggy, motionless forms lying around her, the alphas in their wolf shapes. Tara held their heads upon her lap, up out of the water. She looked bedraggled and anguished, touching each of them in turn, very gently. Her amber eyes were dull.
I don't get it, I said. Why did they stick us down here? Marconi just keeps a pit trap in his yard?
He was planning on trapping MacFin down here until morning, Tara said, when he would be vulnerable.
Whoa, Murphy said, face pensive.
You're saying Denton is responsible for the deaths? All of them?
One way or the other, yeah.
I gave Murphy the rundown on Denton. The way he'd gotten the pelts for him and his people, lost control of the power they'd given him, and set up the street wolves and MacFin to take the blame. Murphy broke out in acidic swearing.
That was the angle I was missing, damn it! No wonder Denton was so hot to keep you off the case and out of the way, and why he wanted to find you so bad after the scene at MacFin's place. That's how he kept showing up everywhere so fast, too. He already knew that someone was dead.
There were shouts from above, and we looked up to see Marconi swing out from the edge of the pit. He hung limply from a rope. His eyes were closed. I watched until he was drawn up in a series of short jerks, until his bowed head bumped the bottom of the hunter's platform above, and then was left there.
What the hell? Murphy said, her voice soft.
Bait, I replied. I closed my eyes for a moment. Denton's stringing him up as bait for MacFin. The loop guru comes in, jumps up to get Marconi, then Denton cuts the rope and drops MacFin down here.
With us, Murphy said quietly.
I felt her shivers grow a little more severe.
They're gonna drop that thing down in the pit with us.
Oh, God, Harry. Denton or one of his people must have gotten some silver bullets made, I said. They'll just let MacFin slaughter us, then shoot him from up there. I squinted at the edge of the pit. It's a pretty good plan.
What can we do? Murphy asked. She hugged herself hard.
I shook my head.
I don't know.
Nothing, Tara said quietly. Murphy and I looked at her. One of the alphas was stirring, Billy, maybe, and wobbled and fell when he tried to sit up. But at least he could hold his head up out of the water.
Nothing, she repeated.
We are beaten.
I closed my eyes and tried to order my thoughts,
to push the pain and fatigue back down and put together some sort of plan. Murphy settled beside me, a shivering spot against my side, the cast on her arm pressed against my ribs. I opened my coat, a polite gesture, more a polite gesture than anything else, given that it, too, was soaked, and slipped the edge of it around her shoulders with my arm. Her back stiffened, and she flashed me a look of indignation, but after a second just pressed as far under the coat as she could and against my side. After a silent moment, she spoke. Her voice came out quiet, uncertain, a far cry from her normal, brisk tones.
I've done some thinking, Dresden. I've decided that there's a reasonable chance that you aren't involved with the killings.
I smiled a little.
That's real big of you, Murph.
Doesn't what Denton did to you sort of prove I'm not involved?
She half-smiled and shook her head.
No, Harry. It just means that he wants to kill you and me both. Doesn't mean that I trust anything you're saying.
He wants me dead, Murph. That should mean something in my favor, shouldn't it?
Not really, she said, and squinted at the top of the pit. From what I can tell, Denton pretty much wants everybody dead, and you could still be lying to me.
I'm not, Merv, I said, my voice soft. Cross my heart.
I can't just take your word on it, Harry, she whispered. There are too many people dead. My men, my people, civilians, others, the ones I'm supposed to protect. The only way to be sure is to take you all, everyone involved, and sort things out with you behind bars.
No, I said. There's more to it than what you can prove, Murph. More than what's going to stand up in court. Come on. You and me, we've known each other for years. You should be able to trust me by now, right?
I should be able to, Murphy agreed. But after what I've seen, all the blood and death...
She shook her head.
No, Harry, I don't trust anyone anymore.
She half smiled and said, I still like you, Dresden, but I can't. I tried to match her smile, but my feelings were in too much turmoil. Pain, mostly. Physical pain. And a deeper heart hurt, both for Murphy's sake and for the sake of our friendship. She was so alone. I wanted to go to the rescue somehow, to make her hurting go away.
She'd have spit in my face if I'd tried. Murphy wasn't the sort of person who wanted to be rescued from anything. That she accepted as much comfort as my wet coat offered her came as a surprise to me.
I looked around the pit again, intently. The other alphas were recovering, enough to sit up, but apparently not enough to move. Tara just sat with her back against the wall, defeated and exhausted. Marconi swung from the platform high above me, not moving, though I thought I might have heard a moan from him at one point. I felt a pang of sympathy for him. However much of a heartless bastard he might be, no one deserved to dangle like bait from a hook. The Alphas, Tara, Marconi, Murphy. They were all where they were because of me. It was my fault they were there, my doing that they were all about to die. Carmichael, the poor jerk, was dead also because of me. So were the other good cops. So was Hendricks. They had to do something about it. I need to get out of here, I told Murphy. Get me out of here and maybe I can do something.
Murphy turned her head toward me.
You mean... She waved the fingers of her unbroken arm in a vaguely mystic gesture. I nodded. I still had my ace in the hole. Something like that.
Right, so how do we get you out of here?
You gonna trust me, Murph?
Her jaw clenched. It doesn't look as though I have much choice, does it?
I smiled back at her and rose to my feet, sloshing around in the water.
Maybe we could dig into the walls a bit. Make climbing holes.
You'll probably get shot once you get to the top, Murphy said.
No, I said. I don't think they're going to want to hang around the pit with McFinn coming. They're bloodthirsty, but not stupid.
So, Murphy said, all we need to do is to get you to the top of the pit. And then you're going to go 1-on-4 with a bunch of armed FBI agents come werewolves and beat them in time to go up against a loop guru that we couldn't stop before with all of your magic gizmos in a building full of police officers.
Essentially, I answered.
Murphy looked up at me and then shrugged and let out a sort of short, defiant laugh. She stood up too, flicked her hair back from her eyes with a toss of her head and said, I guess it could be worse. There was a soft sound from above and behind me. Murphy froze, staring upward, her eyes become almost impossibly wide. I turned my head very slowly. The loop guru crouched up at the lip of the pit, huge and gnarling and muscled and deadly. Its foaming jaws were open, showing the rows of killing teeth. Its eyes gleamed with scarlet flames in the moonlight, and they were fastened on the dangling figure of Gentleman Johnny Marconi. I quivered, and the motion made a slight sound against the water. The beast turned its head down, and when it saw me, its eyes narrowed to glowing slits and let out a harsh, low growl. Its claws dug into the earth at the edges of the pit, tearing through it like sand. It remembered me. My heart started ripping a staccato rhythm in my chest. That same raw, sharp, primitive fear I'd felt before. The fear of simply being jumped on and eaten. Returned in full force for a moment, swept away all thoughts and plans.
You had to say that, I said to Murphy, my voice wan and pale. Happy? It's worse.
Chapter 32.
Okay, I said,
fear making my voice weak. This is bad. This is very, very bad. Wish I had my pistol, Murphy said, her tone resolute. I wish we'd had some more time to talk things out, Harry. I glanced over at Tara. One of the alphas, the mouse-haired girl in her wolf shape, was leaning against her and whimpering. Close your eyes, Tara said softly, and covered the little wolf's eyes with her hands. Her amber eyes met mine, without hope, without any sparkle of life. They were going to die because of me. Damn it all, it wasn't fair. I hadn't done anything grossly stupid. It wasn't fair to have come so far, sacrificed so much, and to buy it down here in the mud like some kind of burrowing bug. I searched the pit again desperately, but it was a fiendishly simple and complete trap. There were no options down here. My eyes went up, straight up. Marconi! I shouted. John Marconi! Can you hear me? The limp figure suspended above me stirred weakly. What do you want, Mr. Dresden? Can you move? I asked. The loup-garou growled low and started pacing a circuit of the pit, glowing eyes flashing between us down at the bottom and Marconi trying to decide who to rip apart first. An arm, Marconi confirmed a few seconds later. Do you still keep that knife on you? The one I saw at the garage? Denton and his associates searched me and found it, I am afraid, came Marconi's voice. Damn it all. You are a miserable, stupid bastard for making a deal with Denton, Marconi. Now do you believe he wanted to kill you all along? The figure above me wiggled and writhed, swinging from the ropes that held him trussed up there. Yes, do tell me that you told me so with your last breath, Mr. Dresden. I was already rather acutely aware of that, Marconi said, his voice dry. But perhaps I'll yet have a chance to make amends. What are you doing? I asked. I kept my eyes on the loup-garou as it circled the pit and kept myself opposite the creature, where I could see it. Reaching for the knife that they didn't find, Marconi replied. He grunted, and I saw a flicker of light on something shiny up above me. Forget it, Murphy said quietly, stepping close to my side as she watched Marconi. He's just going to cut himself loose and leave us to rot here. We won't get a chance to rot, I pointed out, but I thought she was right. Marconi started to spin slowly on his rope, wriggling around until his whole body was rotating on the end of it. He began to speak, his voice calm. Ironic, isn't it? I had planned to wait for the creature on the platform and tempt it into the pit. There are some nets ready to drop on it, after all. I would have held it until morning. You do know that it's right beneath you now, don't you, John? I asked. Mr. Dresden, Marconi said crossly. I asked you not to call me that. Whatever, I said, but I had to admire the raw courage of the man to banter while dangling up there like a ripe peach. I use this place to conduct noisy business, Marconi said. The trees muffle the sound, you see. You can barely even hear shotgun blasts on the other side of the wall. He continued to spin on the rope, slow and lazy, a shadow against the moon and the stars. Well, that's nice, I said. And despicable. The loup-garou looked down at me and snarled, and I took an involuntary step back from it. The mud wall of the pit stopped me. Oh, quite, Marconi agreed. But necessary. Is there anything you're not shameless about, Marconi? I asked. Of course. But you don't think I'm going to tell you, do you? Now be quiet, if you please. I don't need the distraction. And then I saw Marconi's arm curl in and straighten outwards. There was a flutter of metallic motion in the air, and a snapping sound from the base of one of the ropes that held the platform suspended, at its far end, where it was secured to one of the pine trees. The rope abruptly sagged, and the platform, and Marconi with it, swayed drunkenly. Marconi grunted, and bounced against his ropes a few times, making the whole affair of ropes lurch about, and then the damaged line snapped and came entirely free. It whipped around toward Marconi, lost momentum, and then fell through the evening air, straight down into the pit in front of me. One end was still attached to the platform above, now off-center from the pit, and listening to one side. I blinked for a moment, and Murphy said, "Holy shit, he did it." I don't recommend waiting around, Mr. Dresden, Marconi said. I saw him twist his head to look up at the loop guru and tensed up as the beast trotted around the edge of the pit to the side closest to him. If it had noticed the rope that had fallen down from above, it gave no sign. Hope lurched in my chest like sudden thunder. I grabbed onto the rope with both hands and started shimmying up it like a monkey, pushing with my legs and using mostly my good arm to hang on with while I lifted my legs up higher for another grip. I got up to even with the lip of the pit and started rocking back and forth, getting a swinging momentum going so I could leap off the rope and to the ground outside the pit. The ropes above creaked dangerously as I did, and Marconi swayed back and forth, still spinning about gently. Dresden, he shouted, look out. I had been intent on my escape and given the loop guru no thought. I turned my head around to see it flying through the air toward me. I could see its gleaming eyes and felt sure that I could have counted its teeth if I had waited around for it. I didn't. I let out a yelp and let go of the rope, dropping several feet straight down before clamping onto it again. The loop guru sailed past me overhead like some huge, obscenely graceful bat and landed on the far side of the pit with barely a sound. My fingers felt weak. I was so shocked and terrified. But I started hauling my way up again, swinging desperately as I went. The loop guru turned and focused its eyes on me again. But Marconi let out a sharp whistle, and the thing turned toward him, pricking its misshapen ears forward in a weirdly doggy mannerism before it snarled and leapt upward. I bounced on the rope, and Marconi bobbed down and then back up again. The loop guru missed him by bare inches, I think, but I didn't hang around to watch. I let out a yell and threw myself at the edge of the pit as the rope reached the apex of his swing. I missed, my belly hitting the lip of the pit, but I started clawing at the earth and kept myself from falling. I strained and kicked, thrashing and whimpering in desperation, and managed to gain a few inches, slowly worming my way up onto the ground until I felt my feet underneath me. The loop guru on the far side of the pit turned toward me and let out a sound that can be best described as a furious roar. Shouts erupted from somewhere else in the estate. Denton and his lackeys must have been watching the pit, I thought, but they were the second scariest bad guys on the field at the moment. I had bigger things on my mind. Said thing threw itself at me, and I had a few seconds to start running, trying to arrange things so that the pit would be between me and it when it landed. I was only partly successful. The loop guru tore up the earth where I'd been standing when it came down and turned toward me again, facing me across a scant 10 feet of space from one side of the square pit to the side adjacent to it. The rope started bobbling again, and then, with a motion full of grace and power, Tara swung up out of the pit and landed in a crouch on the ground beside me. "Go, wizard," she snarled. "Denton and the others will kill us if they are not stopped. I will handle MacFin." "No way," I said. "You can't possibly take him on." "I know him," she responded. And then there was, in her place, a huge she-wolf, dark fur peppered with gray. She snarled and bounded at the loop guru, and it reared up like a cat about to take a mouse, plunging toward her with abrupt speed. And that's how I saw the difference between Tara and the Alphas, Tara and Denton's Hexenwolfen, even Tara and the loop guru. Where they were fast, Tara was fast and graceful. Where they were quick, Tara was quick and elegant. She made them look like amateurs. She was something more primal, more in tune with the wild than they would ever be. As the loop guru threw itself at her, she slipped to one side like wind, threw her shoulder beneath the beast's planted forepaw, and shouldered it off balance, making it stumble. It recovered and spun toward her, but she was already gone, further away from the pit, growing defiance at the supernatural creature. It followed, impervious and snarling with rage. I heard a gunshot, and a bullet smacked into one of the trees behind me. Ben's voice repeated a low, frantic chant, and then I heard her words turn into an animal's snarls. Denton and the others were coming. It was time to play the last option I had, the one I hadn't wanted to be forced to use. I wasn't sure what would happen if I did, but there wasn't much choice.
I slipped my hand beneath my shirt and touched the wolf belt I had taken from Agent Harris in the alley behind the Full Moon Garage. It was vibrating beneath my fingers, warm to the touch, alive in its own fashion, and full of power and strength that had been channeled into it. I closed my eyes and let that dark, wild power spill into me, mingle with all the fear and pain and wariness inside of me. It was easy. It was easier than any magic I'd ever done. Leaping into me with a sort of hungry eagerness, seeping into me, making pain and fatigue and fear vanish, and replacing it with nothing but strength, ferocity, power. Lupus, I whispered. Lupus, lupara, luparoso. It took no more of a chant than that for the change to take me. It wasn't something that I noticed, really. But when I opened my eyes again, things were simply as they should be, right, in a way so fundamentally profound that I wondered why I had never noticed its lack before. My vision was sharp and clear enough to count the hairs on the head of the she-wolf orienting on me a few feet away. I could hear the pounding of her heart, the restless motion of the wind, the heavy breaths of the other agents in the trees moving toward me like great, clumsy cows. If the sun had suddenly risen into the sky, I could not have seen any more clearly than I did. All in glorious shades of blue and green and maroon and purple, as though God had dipped his brush into a late summer twilight and replaced all darkness with those colors. I dropped my mouth open in a silent laugh and felt my tongue glide over the gleaming, sharp tips of my fangs. What a beautiful night. I could smell blood on the air, hear the eagerness of my enemies to kill. I felt that same hunger rising from my own heart and surging through me. It was perfect. Ben came through the trees first, fast and powerful, but clumsy and impatient and stupid. I could smell her excitement, pitched to an almost sexual level. She was expecting an easy kill, a sudden rush over one of the slow, graceless two legs, and then the hot, spurting blood, the frenzied writhing. I did not oblige her. As she came through the trees, I leapt forward and was at her throat before she even realized I was there. A quick rip, hot blood, and she yelped in agony and fear, throwing herself to one side. Stupid bitch. I'd missed her heart's blood, but she was badly hurt. Two snaps severed her hamstrings as she tried to flee and left her writhing on the ground, helpless and terrified. I felt my body thrill with abrupt and vicious excitement. The bitch was mine now. She would live or die exactly as I wished her to. The surge of power and elation that flew through me at that realization could have carried me off the earth and into the silver glory of the moon and stars themselves. To the victor go the spoils. Her blood, her life, was mine to take, and that's exactly how it should be. I stalked forward to finish her, as was only proper. There was a puff of breath, and then Wilson, in his wolf form, came hurtling from the woods. I slipped easily as he rushed by. The wounded Ben snarled and snapped blindly at him. Wilson turned on her, his fury out of control, and latched his jaws into her throat. Blood was a black, rich, heady smell in the moonlight, and I swayed, drunk, on the aroma of it. My mouth watered, jaws growing damp with saliva as I smelled the bitch's blood, and I wanted to fling myself at her, tear her apart as she went screaming to her death. "Those wolves!" screamed Harris. "They got out! They got Ben!" He came plunging out of the trees, gun at the ready, his nearly useless eyes wide and staring and panicked. He started shooting at Wilson, who released the dead Ben's throat. The first bullet smashed his left front paw to pulp. The second and third slugs hammered into his chest, and Wilson Wolf staggered to one side, yelping in sudden agony. He twisted and strained as he went down, paws scrabbling at his own stomach, until there was abruptly a balding, overweight man lying on the earth beside the dead wolf, his jacket open, his shirt unbuttoned to show the unfastened wolf belt. There was blood all over Wilson, bubbling out of his mouth. "Holy," Harris breathed, pacing closer, his gun held up until he could see what he had done.
George? Oh, God, I thought you were one of them. What the hell?
Agent Wilson didn't answer the red-headed kid. He simply drew his gun from his jacket and started shooting. In their human forms, they couldn't see each other very well in the dark, I thought. They both started shooting at the muzzle flashes. More blood filled the air, along with the sharp, acrid smell of burning gunpowder. Both men went down, bleeding out into the earth, and I felt my jaws open in another smile, on another sense of warm satisfaction. Idiots. Who did they think they were dealing with here? They've been making my life miserable, and the lives of others, and now they got their just desserts. It would have been better had I torn their throats myself, admittedly. But then I thought, there was still Denton to deal with. That thought cheering me, I turned and made my way into the woods, hunting the last of them. My heart was pounding hard and relaxed and steady with excitement as I melded in with the night and searched for prey. Denton and I met as I emerged from the circle of trees. He stood in the moonlight, in the right shape, the only real shape, the moon streaking his brown coat shades paler and making his eyes glow. He was powerfully built. He was as powerfully built as his two-leg shape and looked quick and strong. His eyes burned with the lust of the moon, the night, with blood need and raging, wild strength, just as mine did. We faced one another, and there was a mad sort of joy in it. I would have giggled if I could have. A snarl came bubbling up out of my chest like music, and I launched myself at him. We met in a tangle of scratching claws, snapping teeth, dark fur. He was the stronger, I the quicker. The fight was silent, no breath wasted. It was a duel between us. Our fangs were our swords, thick fur ruffs used as shield and armor. I tasted his blood in my mouth from the slash to an ear, and it hit me like a drug, sent a fury and power coursing through me that I had never known. I threw myself at him again, and an instant later was rewarded for my over-eagerness with a hot pang on my foreleg. Scarlet-black blood stained Denton's fangs in the moonlight. We separated and stalked one another in a slow circle, looking for weakness, our eyes never leaving one another. I laughed at him silently, and he answered me in much the same way. I understood him then, and rejoiced with him in the power he had found. In that moment, I loved the man, felt him a brother, and longed to hold his throat in my jaws as the last of his blood flowed out of him. It was the most ancient of struggles, the deepest of conflicts, survival of the fittest. One of us would live to run again, to hunt, to kill, to taste blood, and the other would be dead and cold on the grass. It was good. We came together again like partners in a dance, moving over the grass together. Dimly, of course, I was aware of Tara dancing with the Luke Guru, but it didn't matter to me, really. They were far away, dozens of yards, and I took no notice of them. My joy was here. We danced under the moon, and he made his first misstep. I threw myself into an open he'd left me, knocked him to the ground with my shoulder, and as he rolled and twisted away, I took his back leg right across the big tendon. He screamed his fury, but I heard the fear in it, too. He scrambled to his three good paws again and turned to face me, but there was terrible knowledge in his eyes, just as there was in mine. We both knew it was all over but the bleeding. I shuddered. Yes, the bleeding. He could still face me, could still hurt me if I were foolish, but I wasn't. I began to wear him down, pressing him with short rushes and quick withdrawals that forced him to shift his weight awkwardly, stumble on his three working limbs to wear him out. As his reactions became slower, I tested him with a few flashing passes of fangs. Once more I tasted his blood. I gave him a dozen small wounds, and each taste of him made my frenzy all the more satisfying. The night, the dance, the violence, the blood, all of it was overwhelming, more than any power I had ever felt, any medicine I'd ever tasted, even in my dreams or in the wild realms of the never-never. It was pure beauty, pure pleasure, pure power. Victory was mine. I grew contemptuous of him as he began to whimper, to seek escape. The fool. He should never have tested himself against me. Should never have tried his strength against mine. Had he yielded to me at once, I would have been content to lead him, to accept him as a follower, and taken him with me on the hunts. It was sad, in a way. But then, I could always find others. It would not be difficult to make the belts, I thought, to give them to a few people to try. Once they had, they'd never take them off again. I stalked Denton as he faltered, and I thought of running with Susan, of filling our mouths with hot, sweet blood, of taking her in the ecstasy of the night and the kill, and it made me shake with anticipation. I threw myself at Denton, knocked him over, and went for his throat. The fool scrambled and took his belt off, melting into an ugly two-leg form, his suit covered in blood. "Please," he croaked. "Oh, God, please. Don't kill me. Don't kill me." I snarled in answer. I let my fangs tighten on his neck. I could feel his pulse against my tongue. Don't kill him. That he would beg at all was contemptuous. He should have known the law of the jungle before he started trying to rule it. Who did he think he was dealing with? Someone who would give him mercy? Let him survive, crippled and pathetic, and feed him when he whined again? I wanted to laugh. My jaws tightened on his throat. I wanted to feel him die. Something told me that everything else I'd experienced since I found my true self was child's candy next to the passing of a life beneath me. I shook with eagerness. Denton continued to beg, and it made me hesitate. I snarled, annoyed. No. No weakness. No mercy. I wanted his blood. I wanted his life. He had tried me and failed. Kill him. Kill him and take my rightful place. Who did he think I was?
"Harry?"
whispered a terrified voice. Without releasing his throat, I looked up. Susan stood there in the moonlight, slender and graceful for a two legs. Her camera was in one hand, dangling, forgotten at her side. Her eyes were wide with desire, and she smelled of perfume and our mating and of fear. Something pressed at my awareness, as though part of me wanted to ignore her, to rip and rend. I focused on Susan, on her expression, on her eyes. They weren't wide with desire. They were terrified. She was terrified of me.
"My God," Susan said. "Harry!"
She fell to her knees, staring at me, at my eyes. I felt Denton's pulse beneath my tongue, felt his whimpers vibrate into my mouth. So easy. One simple motion, and I would never have any doubts, fears, questions, never again. "And," something inside me said in a calm tone, "you'll never be Harry Dresden again." Power. I could feel the belt's power in me, its magic, its strength. I recognized it now. That dark surety, that heady and careless delight, I recognized why there were parts of me that loved it so much. I released Denton's throat and backed away from him. I scrambled with my paws, my stomach twisting in sudden nausea, rebelling at the very idea of what I was about to do. I sobbed and tore the belt from my waist, ripping my shirt in the process, feeling my body grow awkward and heavy and clumsy and pained again. Injuries that had been nothing to my to the wolf form returned in vengeance to my human frailty. I threw the belt away from me as far as it would go. I could feel hot tears on my face at the loss of that joy, that energy, that impervious strength. "You bastard," I said to Denton. "Damn you. You poor bastard." He lay on his side now, whimpering from his injuries, bleeding from many wounds, one leg curled limp and useless beneath him. I crawled to him and took his belt away, threw it after the other. Susan rushed over to me, but I caught her before she could embrace me. "Don't touch me," I warned her, and I meant it with every cell in me. "Don't touch me now." Susan flinched away from me as though the words had burned her.
"Harry,"
she whispered.
"Oh, God, Harry, we've got to get you away from all this."
From the far side of the ring of trees, there was another furious bellow. There was motion in the trees, and then Murphy, leading a stumbling, clumsy string of naked alphas, came out of the woods toward me, staying low. She had a gun, probably taken from one of the bodies, in her good hand. "All right," I said, as they approached and turned a shoulder to Susan, pressing her away. I couldn't even look at her. "Murphy, you and Susan get these kids out of here. Now." "No," Murphy said. "I'm staying." Her eyes flickered to Denton, narrowing in a flash of anger, and they dismissed him again as quickly. She made no move to examine his injuries. Maybe she didn't care if he bled to death either. "You can't hurt McFinn," I said. "And you can?" she asked. She leaned closer and peered at me. "Christ, Dresden, you've got blood all over your mouth." I snarled. "Take the kids and go, Karen. I'm handling things here." Murphy, for an answer, slipped the safety off the gun. "I'm the cop here," she said, "not you. This is a bust in progress. I'm staying until the end." She smiled tight. "When I can sort out who's the good guy and who isn't." I spat out another curse. "I don't have time to argue with you. Susan, get the kids back in the van." "But Harry," she began. Fury rose to the top of the rampant emotions coursing through me. "I've got enough blood on my hands," I screamed. "Get these kids out of here, damn you!" Susan's dark-toned face went pale. She turned to the nearest of the naked, wet, shivering alphas, Georgia, as it happened. She took the young woman's hand, had the others line up in a drug-hazed confusion and join hands, and then led them away. I watched them go and felt a seething anger and sorrow and fear in me twist around in confusion. From the far side of the woods, there was another bellow of rage, a shaking of one of the evergreens, and then a sharp, sudden yelp of purest anguish. Terra. The sound of the she-wolf's pain rose to a frantic gurgling sound and then went silent. Murphy and I stared at the trees. I saw a flicker of red eyes somewhere behind them, and then it was gone. "It's coming around," Murphy said. "It will circle around to get us." "Yeah," I said. The Loop Guru's blood was up after the infuriating chase after Terra. It would go after whatever it saw next. My mouth twisted bitterly. I had a unique insight into its point of view. "What do we do now?" Murphy said, her knuckles whitened on the gun. "We go after it and try to hold it long enough for Susan and the kids to get away," I said. "What about Marconi?" "What about him? He saved our lives," I said. Murphy's expression said she wasn't happy about that idea. "We owe him." "You want to get him out of there?" "I don't want to leave anyone else to that thing," I said. "How about you?" She closed her eyes and let out a breath. "All right," she said. "But God, this smells like you're trying to set me up, Dresden. If you get me killed, there's no one left who saw what happened here, is there?" "If you want to be safe, go after Susan," I said bluntly. "We split up. One of us attracts its attention. Maybe the other will get through." "Fine," Murphy snarled. "Fuck you, Harry Dresden." Famous last words, I thought, but I didn't waste my breath on voicing it. It was time to face the Loop Guru. Chapter 33. I circled into the trees and stepped over Harris's corpse. The kid's face had been smashed in by two bullets, though the semi-automatic was still in his dead hand. Murphy must have had Wilson's gun. Wilson lay not far from Harris, also dead. Wounds to the chest, massive bleeding. Ben lay next to him, naked, but for a business skirt soaked in blood. There was a line of greenish goo around her waist, probably the remains of the wolf belt. Its magic must have died when she did. I tried not to look at the mangled meat on the back of her thighs, or the tears near her jugular. I tried not to smell her blood, or to notice the dark surge of contemptuous pride that went through me, leftovers from my experience with my own wolf belt. I shuddered and went past the bodies. The night was silent but for the wind and the creaking of the ropes that surrounded the platform in the middle of the encircling evergreens. I could still see Marconi up there, hog-tied up there. The position must have been excruciating. It isn't every day you get crucified and hung up as dinner for a monster, and you really can't train your muscles for it. I couldn't see Marconi's expression, but I could almost feel his agony. I waved a hand as he spun gently toward me, and he nodded his head, silent. I pointed at my eyes and then looked around at the shadowy trees, trying to ask him if he knew where the loup garou was, but he shook his head. Either he didn't understand me or he didn't see it, and either way it didn't do me any good. I grimaced and moved forward through the trees, skirting the edge of the pit. I looked for the rope that must have been used to haul Marconi up to his current position. It had to have been tied off somewhere low. I peered through the near dark, following the strand of rope back to the tree it was tied to, and headed over toward it. Maybe I could get out of this. Maybe Murphy and I could escape with Marconi, join Susan and the others, and get out of here. No. That was a happy fantasy. Even if I did get everyone out, I knew I couldn't live with myself if I let the loup garou go loose tonight on another killing spree. I had to stop it. I was already going to have a hard enough time living with myself. The rope supporting Marconi had been secured with a hasty knot, easily undone. I started working it, rubbernecking all around, listening, trying to locate the loup garou. It wouldn't have just run off and left us here alive, would it? I took a turn around the tree with the rope to give me a little leverage, and then, very carefully, because of my bum arm, started lowering Marconi. If I could get him low enough, I could have him swing over to me from the pit center, catch him, balance him, and then go back and release the rope. It would have been easier if Murphy was there, but I hadn't seen her. A nasty little thought hit me. What if Murphy had run across the loup garou and it had killed her silently? What if it was, even now, trying to get to me? I secured the rope and moved back over to the pit. Marconi, no dummy, was already swinging back and forth as best he could, trying to get himself over to me, keeping my weight well away from the crumbling earth at the pit's lip. Marconi let out a sudden, startled hiss and said, "Dresden, the pit!" I looked down and saw the loup garou's eyes glowing down in the darkness of the pit, only a heartbeat before he surged toward me with a howl of rage. It was coming up the wall of the pit, simply gouging its claws into the mud and hauling itself upward toward me. I reeled back from the thing, threw out a hand, and screamed, "Fuego!" Nothing happened, except for a little puff of steam, like a breath exhaled into the cold night, and sudden, blinding pain in my head. The loup garou hurtled toward me, and I threw myself down to the earth, rolling away from its claws as it came over the edge of the pit. It raked me, caught the edge of my leather duster, and pinned me to the earth. I liked the coat, but I didn't like it that much. I slipped out of it as a loup garou clawed with its rear legs, much as I had only a few moments before, and inched up out of the pit. I was already running by the time it got out, and I heard it snarl, get its bearings, and then come after me. I was dead. I was so dead. I had gotten the kids out, and Susan, and I had stopped Denton and his cronies, but I was about to pay the price. I slipped through the trees and out into the grass again, panting, cold now that my jacket was off. My shoulder ached from the running, from all the motion, and my foot hurt like hell. I couldn't run any longer, physically couldn't. My steps slowed, despite the commands of my brain, and I wept in frustration, weaving around just to keep on my feet. I was at the end of my rope. It was over. I turned to face the trees, to watch the loup garou coming. I wanted to see it coming, at least. If I was going to be killed, I wanted to face it on my feet, head on, go down with a little dignity. I saw its red eyes back among the trees. It came forward, slow, low to the ground, wary of some trick. I had stung it before, if not actually hurt it. It didn't want to fall victim to another such attack, I thought. It wanted to be absolutely sure that I was dead. I drew in a breath and straightened my back. I lifted my chin, trying to prepare myself. If I was going to go down, I'd go down as a wizard should, proud and ready to face what was beyond. I could spill out my death curse, a potent working of magic if I had time to speak it. Maybe I could counter MacFin's curse with it, take the horrible transformation off him that St. Patrick had allegedly laid on him. Or maybe I could bring down Marconi's criminal empire with it. I debated these things as I drew out the silver pentacle amulet I had inherited from my mother, so that it would lie bright on my chest. My mother's amulet. Silver. Amulet. Inherited from my mother. Inherited silver. My eyes widened and my hands started to shake. A drowning man will reach for anything that floats. The idea floated. If only I could pull it off. If only my brainlessness hadn't kept me from realizing what I had until it was too late. I took the silver pentacle off of my neck, breaking the chain in my haste. I caught the broken ends in my fist as I fastened my eyes on the Loup Garou and started to whirl the amulet in a circle above my head with my good arm. The amulet described a circle in the night air as I spun it, and I invested that circle with a tiny spark of will, a tiny bit of power. My head pounded. I felt the circle close around me, containing magical energies, focusing them. I hurt. I was weary. I felt as though I had betrayed myself, given myself over to the darkness I had tried so hard to resist by donning the evilly enchanting wolf belt. Because, let there be no mistaking, that is evil. Anything with that much power and that little control, that utter lack of concern for anything but itself, is evil, in the most effective sense of the word. There was nothing left inside of me, but I had to find it. I had to find enough magic to stop this bloodletting once and forever. I searched inside of me, where everything was numb and empty and tired. Magic comes from the heart, from your feelings, your deepest expressions of desire. That's why black magic is so easy. It comes from lust, from fear and anger, from things that are easy to feed and make grow. The sort I do is harder. It comes from something deeper than that, a truer and purer source. Harder to tap, harder to keep, but ultimately more elegant, more powerful. My magic, that was at the heart of me. It was a manifestation of what I believed, what I lived. It came from my desire to see to it that someone stood between the darkness and the people it would devour. It came from my love of a good steak, from the way I would sometimes cry at a good movie or a moving symphony, from my life, from the hopes that I could make things better for someone else, if not always for me. Somewhere in all of that, I touched on something that wasn't tapped out. In spite of how horrible the past few days had been, something that hadn't gone cold or numb inside of me. I grasped it, held it in my hand like a firefly, and willed its energy out into the circle I had created with the spinning amulet on the end of its chain. It began to glow, azure blue like a candle flame. The light spread down the chain and to the amulet, and when it reached it, the light became incandescent, a pentacle of bright light at the end of the chain, spinning a circle of light around me, trailing motes of dust that fell like starlight onto the grass around me. "Vento," I whispered, then called more loudly, "Vento servitas, ventas, vento servitas." In the bushes, the Loup Garou snarled quietly, and its eyes brightened, burned with scarlet fury. It started moving toward me. Without warning, Murphy stepped between me and the Loup Garou, her gun held in both hands in a shooter stance, though the cast made that awkward. She held her gun pointed directly at me. "Harry," she said in a very calm tone, "get down on the ground right now." My eyes widened. I could see over Murphy. I could see the Loup Garou moving rapidly toward her through the trees. I saw it focus on her, felt its malice and hunger spread toward her and envelop her. I couldn't speak. I couldn't break the chant or stop whirling the amulet. To do so would have released the energy I'd gathered, the very last strength I had in me. My head hammered with pain that would have had me screaming on any other night. I kept the amulet whirling, spraying motes of light, brilliant white pentacle at the end of a leash of blue light. "I mean it, Harry," Murphy said. "I don't know what you're doing, but get down." Her eyes were intense, and she lifted the gun, thumbing back the hammer. Trust. Whatever trust she had in me was gone. She'd seen or thought of something that made her think I was going to betray her. The Loup Garou rushed closer, and I thought, with a sick feeling in my stomach, that Susan and the Alphas hadn't even had time to make it off the estate yet, much less all the way back to the van. If the Loup Garou got through me, it would kill them, one by one, follow their trail like a hound, and tear them apart.
Harry,
Murphy said, her voice pleading. Her hand was shaking. Please, Harry, get down. The loup-garou came through the woods in a sudden rush, and Murphy drew in a breath, ready to fire. I kept the amulet whirling and felt the power grow, my head splitting with agony, and made my choice. I just hoped I could finish the job before Murphy gunned me down. Everything of the last few days came down to that single instant. It all slowed down, giving me time to view it in agonizing detail. The loup-garou rose up behind Murphy, leaping toward her through the air. It was still huge, still powerful, and more terrifying than ever. Its jaws were open, aimed for her blonde head, and would crush it with a single snap. Murphy narrowed her eyes, peering down the shaking barrel of her gun. Flame blossomed from the barrel, reaching out toward me. She wasn't 20 feet away from me. I didn't think there was any way she could miss, and I thought, with a pang of sadness, that I wanted a chance to apologize to her before the end. For everything. Vento servitas, I shouted, and released the spell. The circle and the amulet, as the sound of the shot, hit me like a slap in the face. Power rushed out of me, everything I had left in me, focused and magnified by the circle and the time I'd taken to refine it, flying toward the leaping loup-garou. Something hot and painful hammered into my torso, almost like it had hit my back. I toppled forward, too weak and tired to care anymore, but I watched what happened to the amulet. The pentacle flew toward the loup-garou like a comet, incandescent white, and struck the creature's breast like lightning hammered into an ancient tree. There was a flash of light, too much power unleashed in a flaring of energy as a mystic substance shattered the loup-garou's invulnerability, carved into it, coursed through it in a blinding blue and white shower of sparks. Blue fire erupted from its chest, its black heart's blood igniting into blinding flame, and the creature screamed, arching backward in agony. There was the sound of thunder, flashes of more light, someone screaming. Maybe it was me. The loup-garou fell to earth and changed. Muzzle melted back into human face, fangs and claws faded, warped muscles slithered away into gobs of clear, preternatural ooze that would quickly vanish. Fur disappeared, knotted limbs straightened into clean arms and legs, until Harley McFinn lay before me, partly on his side, one hand pressed to his heart. The silver of my amulet's chain spilled out between his fingers and dangled down his chest. He stared down at the wound for a moment, and then I saw him relax. McFinn looked up, and in his face I saw all the grief and agony and impotent rage, everything he'd felt during the years of being unable to control himself. Cursed to cause death and destruction when all he wanted was to open a park for the wildlife. It all flooded out of him. His eyes cleared and warmed as he looked at me, and he gave me a small, quiet smile. It was an expression of forgiveness, something to let me know that he understood. And then he laid his head down and was gone. My own blackness followed soon after. Chapter 34. I woke up. That surprised me, in itself. I woke up to see the moon still high overhead and to feel Murphy's hand on my forehead. Come on, Harry, she whispered. Don't do this to me. I blinked my eyes a few times and whispered, You shot me, Murph. I can't believe you shot me. She blinked her eyes at me to hold back tears. You stupid jerk, she said, her voice gentle. You should have got down when I told you to. I was busy. She glanced over her shoulder at McFinn's silent, still form. Yeah, I saw after. She turned back to me, looking a little past me, focused elsewhere. It's all right, I said. I forgive you. I thought it was very generous of me, appropriate to the last moments of a man's life. Murphy blinked at me and then stiffened. You what? Forgive you, Murph, for shooting me. Your job and all, I understand. Murphy's eyes narrowed dangerously. You think, she said, her face twisted with disgust as she spattered for a moment and then spat to one side. She began again. You think that I thought you were one of the bad guys still? and shot you because you wouldn't surrender? I felt too weak and dizzy to argue.
Hey, it's understandable. Don't worry about it. I shivered.
I'm so cold.
We're all cold, moron, Murphy snapped. A front came through about the same time they threw us in that freaking pit. Must be below 40 already, and we're wet besides. Sit up, El Cid. I blinked at her.
What?
Sit up, dummy, Murphy said. Look behind you. I did sit up, and it didn't hurt much worse than it had earlier this evening, surprising me again. I looked behind me. Denton was there. He had a fallen branch in one hand, like a club. His eyes were wide and staring and savage, his face pale with loss of blood. There was a neat hole in his forehead, right in the middle. I blinked at the body for a moment.
But how did he...
I shot him, you jerk. He came running up behind you, just as I came back from giving first aid to that naked woman, Tara West. I was shaking too hard to have a safe shot with you standing, and I didn't know the loup-garou was coming up behind me. She stood up.
I can't believe this, she said, and turned to walk away.
You thought I shot you?
Murph, I protested. Murph, give me a break. I mean, I thought...
She snorted at me over her shoulder. She snorts well for someone with a cute little button of a nose.
You didn't think, Dresden, flipping her hair back from her eyes.
Dramatic death scene, noble sacrifice, right? Totally misunderstood.
Ha! I understand you, buddy.
You're such a pompous, arrogant, pretentious, chauvinistic, hopelessly old-fashioned, stupidly pig-headed... Murphy went on in graphic detail and at great length about me as she walked away to call the police and an ambulance, and it was music to my ears. I lay back on the grass, tired but smiling. Things were all right between us. The police had one hell of a time sorting out the mess at Marconi's place. I made sure to collect all the wolf belts. Murphy helped me. We burned them, right there, in a stinking fire made of branches. It was too hard for me to throw them in. Murph did it for me. She understands things, sometimes, that I could never explain to her. Later, I went with Murph to Carmichael's funeral. She went with me to Kim Delaney's. Those are the kind of things friends do for each other. Mr. Hendricks, as it turns out, had worn his Kevlar under the black fatigues. They put him next to me in the ambulance that night, when I had finally left the scene. They'd bared his chest, and it was a solid mass of purple bruises, so that we were a matched set. He glowered at me in silence, but he breathed steadily through the oxygen mask on his face. I felt absurdly cheered when I saw him alive. All things considered, can you blame me? Marconi got arrested on general principles, but nothing stuck. Though everything had happened on his property, injuries on the FBI agents indicated that they had all done one another in or been killed by an animal, except for Denton, of course. None of the police officers there possessed a warrant, etc., etc. I hear his lawyers had him out in less than 3 hours. Marconi called me a few days later and said, "You owe me your life, Mr. Dresden. Are you sure we can't talk business?" "The way I see it, John," I told him, "you owe me your life. After all, even if you'd cut yourself free, you'd have just fallen down into the pit and gotten eaten up with the rest of us. I figure you thought your highest chances of survival were in freeing me, the wizard who deals with this kind of thing, to handle it."
"Of course," Marconi said, with a note of disappointment in his voice. "I just hoped you hadn't realized it."
"Nevertheless, Harry..."
"Don't call me Harry," I said, and hung up on him.
Susan filmed the death of the loup-garou from less than 50 yards away with a pretty good zoom lens and special light-sensitive film. The light from my amulet illuminated the scene rather dramatically without really showing many details. You can only see my back, and it looks like I'm swinging a glow stick around and then throwing it at the monster, which can be seen in only shadowy detail as something large and furry. At the point when I released the spell, there's a burst of static, about a second long, where the magic messed up Susan's camera, even from far away. In the film, the static clears, and you can see Murphy shoot Denton off my back just before he brains me with his club. Then she spins around like Rambo, jumps out of the way of the leaping furry something or other, and empties the rest of the clip into the thing out of reflex. Murph and me both know the bullets didn't hurt it at all, that it was just a reflexive gesture on her part, but I don't need the attention. She was quite the hero, according to the camera, and that was fine with me. Susan's film went on the morning news, and it was shown for about 2 hours.